listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. It is Bring It On Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in today, and as you know, for the rest of next week, with the exception of Tuesday. And before we get to all the Freedom Lines and everything else, we have a special guest on the line. As many of you know, yesterday I spent the entire 3 hours of that program honoring the 45th anniversary of the death of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And today we have a very special guest, Reverend Dr. William J. Barber II, who is the president of the North Carolina NAACP, and we're going to be talking today about voter suppression in North Carolina in particular, then also following that up a little bit later with respect to voter suppression nationwide. So without further ado, let's welcome the Reverend. Reverend, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Glad to be on with you today. Hope you're doing well.
Every day's a blessing, right, Reverend?
Well, it is. It is. And, you know, you said yesterday while we were mourning, remembering the death of Dr. King and his fight for justice, down here in North Carolina, the Republican-led leadership of the General Assembly took that day to actually pass a voter suppression bill, new form of voter ID. North Carolina has the best laws already. We have something called signature attestation. If you lie, you get a five-year felony. We had 70% of African Americans vote last year during the general election, 68% of North Carolina. North Carolinians, we've had the highest increase of any state in the nation since 2004, and while Democrats were pushing and the progressives have been pushing a bill to actually increase same-day registration and guarantee Sunday and Saturday voting and create online registration, the progressives decided on the anniversary of the death of Dr. King to pass a bill, a voter ID bill, voter suppression that will affect more than 600,000 people in our state in a negative way.
Unbelievable. Reverend, now I would have to think, and you can corroborate this for me, but do you think that timing was purposeful with respect to Dr. King's 45th anniversary of his death?
Well, it's either purposeful or they're just ignorant, because on that same day, they also passed a bill to repeal the Racial Justice Act. We had a bill passed last year, that 2 years ago, that we fought for our coalition of over 147 groups that said that race was still being used in the application of death penalty. The scholars found it, statistics found it, a Republican judge said it was constitutional, a Democratic judge found that there were actually cases of racial bias in the death penalty, and in spite of all of that fact, on the same day, in the Senate, they passed a bill to repeal the Racial Justice Act and to restart the death penalty, and then in the House, they passed a bill that directly targets black voters, the elderly voters, the poor, that will suppress the vote. So either they don't know history, or are ignorant of it, or are deliberately despising history and doing these things in the face of history. But ultimately, they will not be succeed, because we're going to fight them in court, we're going to fight them in the street, and we're going to continue to fight back against what we see happening here.
Now, let me ask you this, Reverend, too. We spoke about this yesterday on the program, and we saw that there was a bill that was sponsored in the North Carolina Assembly, along with 10 other Republicans. It seemed all 11 Republicans were trying to put forward a bill that, as Dr. King used to talk about, nullification, whereby North Carolina could set up its own version of a theocracy or a religion, and then at the same time ignore federal law. I mean, is this happening in conjunction with all the voter suppression all at the same time?
Well, let me give you a quick rundown. Exactly right. This is the new form of interposition and nullification. And I contend that what is happening is we're on the verge or right in the middle of a third reconstruction with the election of President Obama, the new electorate, the changing South, the South, solid South being broken open by the new demographics. And if you look back at the first and second reconstruction, the one in the 1800s and the one in the 1900s, 1960s, there were always five attacks that people went after when they wanted to stop progress. They attacked voting rights, labor rights, educational rights, progressive tax policy, criminal justice laws, and they attacked the leaders of the progressive movement. That's what we're seeing in this General Assembly. The Tea Party led real quickly. They passed a bill to deny 500,000 people Medicaid. They passed a bill to deny 165,000 people full unemployment. They have a bill now, as you said, to create their own theocracy, even though our state constitution says that the state of North Carolina has to comply with federal law, and that's been on the books since 1868. They're trying to pass voter suppression. They're trying to roll back public education and give more money to charter and private schools. They're talking about undoing the tax policies and making it a sales tax as opposed to and trying to end corporate tax and end personal income tax and use sales tax only. But yesterday, our governor talked about making Medicaid privatized. Just last week, they hung the Confederate flag in the governor's office by claiming that it was going to stay there to honor the 200th anniversary of the centennial of the Civil War. So, yes, what we are seeing is an all-out attempt to try to roll back history and to try to stop the forward movement, particularly of a southern state, that they really can't stop because the South is changing. But this is kind of like their last hurrah to try to do these things.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Reverend. I live here in Arizona. I'm actually a physician. I take care of the elderly and the poor here in Arizona. But we have a very similar situation, unfortunately, with a very far-right conservative Arizona state legislature that tries to co-opt into and codify into law a lot of the stuff that you're talking about. But I agree with you, Reverend. I think these are desperate measures, and these are last-gasp attempts at these individuals because they see the changing face of America. They see that America is, you know, a multicultural nation, rich in many aspects, and we are a rainbow coalition, and the days of just, you know, white men ruling the roost are slipping through their fingers, and I think they are reacting to that. Is that what you think is happening in North Carolina?
Exactly. They are afraid of a heterogeneous electorate, a heterogeneous society. We had over nearly 20,000 people to gather this past February in front of the legislature. They tell me the governor came out and looked and shook his head because it was black, it was white, it was young, it was old, it was Latino, it was LGBT, it was labor, it was people of faith, people of non-faith. But it was people saying we want to forward together, not one step back. That's our mantra here. So they've had this glitch. You know, they changed the redistricting rules last year. We're in court now about that, which kind of set up their ability to elect this very regressive, conservative legislature. But they can see the handwriting on the wall.
Sure.
They know that if we get to 72% of the African-American population voting, and then which now, by the way, the African-Americans make up about 26% of the electorate in North Carolina, Latinos about 5%, that's 31%. If you get 20% of whites to vote their future and not their fears, then that's the majority, and that changes the electorate in the South. I'm on my way to Georgia. Georgia's electorate has changed fundamentally. Mississippi has changed fundamentally. The nation is changing, and so I see this as a last-minute effort to try to stop the third Reconstruction. In fact, for your listeners, there's a piece I have out on the Internet called The Story of America, the Third Reconstruction, that they can actually Google. They can't stop it, so they're trying to grab power while they have a chance. And we believe ultimately it won't work. In fact, one other bill that they put out yesterday, my friend, is they wanted to say in order to vote, you had to have your mental competency tested. You know, that takes us back to
the Jim Crow laws.
Jim Crow law. And they also have a bill that says if you commit a crime and you pay all your debts to society, you still have to wait 5 years, and then you have to go before the local Board of Elections, and they have to vote unanimously for you to get your citizenship rights back. Now, we believe all of these bills will be challenged as unconstitutional because we're going to challenge them in court. But it's desperation. That's all it is. It's a fear of a future that they cannot stop from coming into existence.
Absolutely. Well, listen, Reverend, thank you for all the work you do. God bless you, and keep up the march towards freedom and equality, because I have hope, and I'm inspired by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. That's why I dedicated the show to him yesterday, and I do believe that we all will get to that promised land. So thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Forward together, not one step back.
Okay. All right. Back in a moment, my friends.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Mike Newcomb, broadcasting live from 1480 KPHX, Phoenix, Arizona. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. All righty, welcome back, my friends. It's Bring It On Friday here in the Tom Hartman Program. 1-866-987-THOM is the number if you want to participate. We have another special guest on the line right now. The name is Penda Hare, and Penda is an attorney and co-founder and co-director of the Advancement Project. And we just spoke to Reverend Dr. William J. Barber II regarding voter suppression in North Carolina. Well, guess what? It's not isolated to just North Carolina. This is something that is happening nationwide. So let's go to our esteemed guest, Penda Hare. Penda, welcome to the table.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
It's great to have you, Penda. Well, listen, we just spoke to Dr. Reverend William J. Barber II, and he told us about what's happening in North Carolina. But as I said, this is not something that's just isolated to one state in the South. Voter suppression appears to be going on nationwide wherever you look, whether it's Pennsylvania, here in Arizona, North Carolina. Give us the scope of this problem and how widespread is it?
Well, starting in 2011, the laws to make voting harder for seniors, for students, for people of color, for people with lower incomes were enacted in several states, including Texas, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, and Tennessee. And most of those laws were blocked from being implemented by the courts for the 2012 election cycle. But now, in 2013, we're seeing 30 more states proposing such laws, including, as you said, North Carolina, and then Virginia and Arkansas have recently passed laws that will make it harder to vote by requiring a very restrictive form of photo ID that a lot of people don't have. And what we know is happening is that there is a group called the American Legislative Exchange Council.
ALEC,
which is supported by the Koch brothers, and among others, and they really represent the interests of corporate power, the interests of the 1%, and they have developed model bills to make it harder for people to vote, especially people who are not in the 1%, people who are working, who have difficulty coming on the fixed hours on election day, but use early voting. So in the states, in addition to very restrictive photo IDs, we're seeing proposals to cut back on early voting, to cut out Sunday voting, which is particularly used by churches and campaigns called Souls to the Polls. And in North Carolina, we're even seeing a law that would not allow a child to be claimed as a dependent and get a $2,000 credit on the income tax if the child votes at college instead of at home. So they're really trying to suppress students from organizing at their colleges and voting, even though the students are residents of the town where the college is.
That's insane. Now, Penda, let's be honest about this, though, too. I mean, all of those groups that you spoke about, aren't those the groups that pretty much comprise the base of the Democratic Party? I mean, I know that you reference all these individual groups, but isn't this a concerted effort on a part of ALEC and the Koch brothers to sort of suppress the votes of liberals and progressives and the Democratic Party in particular?
Yes. In fact, they admitted it in 2011 and 2012 in lawsuits that it, including lawsuits that Advancement Project was involved in. And the Speaker of the House of Representatives in Pennsylvania, for example, Mr. Terzai, said in an unguarded moment that he had passed photo ID in Pennsylvania in order to make sure that Mitt Romney could carry the state. So we know that these are partisan manipulations of the rules in order to make sure that, that certain people can vote and certain people can't vote. And to me, it is one of the most anti-democratic schemes I've ever seen.
Oh, absolutely.
Frightening. That if we don't have a voice in electing who represents us in democracy, then we don't have a democracy.
No, no doubt about it. And isn't it quite interesting that most of the time you hear conservatives who are so adamantly against, you know, rules and oppressive regulations, but when it comes to actually exercising your right and your freedom constitutionally to vote, all of a sudden they want all rules and new regulations to suppress that.
Oh my gosh, it's going to be so much harder to vote than it will be to get a gun in this country. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, because another thing that you hear about and the talking points, the propaganda I feel that they like to espouse, is that it's widespread. This fraud is so widespread that we really need to, you know, buckle down and make sure that people are truly citizens and truly have the right to vote. All the studies that I've seen, it seems like you're more likely to get hit by lightning than you are to encounter voter fraud. What are you seeing with respect to real objective numbers and studies as to how widespread or not widespread voter fraud is?
You are absolutely correct. The only voter fraud that's going on are efforts to deny lawful voters the opportunity to cast a ballot and have it counted. There is no voting fraud that these laws would prevent. In fact, in cases that we've litigated, when they had to produce evidence, they had to come in to court and say, we don't have any evidence of fraud. And in fact, in North Carolina, the politicians that are supporting these, the proposals that are currently in the legislature there have admitted that it's not fraud that they are trying to address. They said they just want to do it because they want to, the people want it.
Wow.
And first, it's, you can't take away somebody's fundamental right because the people want it. And second, I believe that when the people of North Carolina understand what this is, they're not going to want it.
Right. Now, I saw a little post on Facebook today by Rachel Maddow, something to the effect that, look, that's why a right is a right. You don't vote on a right. If it's a right, you can't just craft bills and then decide you're going to vote to deny somebody that right.
Exactly.
No, no doubt about it. Well, listen, Penda, keep up your good work. If people want to learn a little bit more about this nationwide voter suppression being conducted specifically by conservatives and the Republican Party, what can they do to get on board with your team and help all Americans exercise that constitutional right to vote?
Yes, check out www.advancementproject.org or our Twitter feed, or give us a call, and we will be happy to put you in contact with this information.
Excellent. Well, Penda, thank you for all your good work, and keep it up. Keep up the faith and keep moving forward.
Thank you so much.
All right. We appreciate your time on the air. All right, listen, we're going to be back. It is Bring It On Friday, my friends. Let me give you the number for the Freedom Lines, 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Dr. Mike Newcomb, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Okay, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We're getting to the Freedom Lines right now. The number, as many of you already know, 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466. It is Bring It On Friday, so whatever you want to talk about is fair game. It doesn't have to be about topics that we're specifically talking about or guests that we're interviewing. So, and it also doesn't matter. I don't care if you're from the left or the right. I don't care if you're Democrat, Republican. I don't care if you're Green Party, no party. I can care less if you're Christian, atheist, Jew, Muslim. Anybody gets a say here on the Tom Hartman Program. All you simply got to do is pick up the phone, call that number I just referenced. The Freedom Lines are open, and we'll give you a chance to have your say on live national radio. Actually, it's international, isn't it? I think Tom broadcasts internationally.
Well, sure. I mean,
he's heard in multiple continents, and then also on freespeech.org. You can watch it on the internet and on TV like that. So there's many avenues to get involved with the show through all these multiple mediums, okay? But before I do that, I just want to also remind people, in case you're just tuning in today, you didn't listen the last several days, Tom is out in Germany right now, and Tom is actually doing God's work. He works with an organization called Salem International, and just let me tell you a little bit about it. It is a non-denominational Christian, not-for-profit welfare organization that was founded way back in 1957 by a dear friend of Tom's named Gottfried Mueller, who was in the interim deceased. And Tom gave a very, very emotional eulogy, which I believe you can actually access that on saleminternational.org if you're interested. But the name Salem is derived from the Hebrew word shalom, and shalom means peace. So everything that Salem International does, all the projects that they are affiliated with, all have the common shared values of peace and helping those in need and respect for life. So kudos to Tom and all the people affiliated with that organization for going out there and helping those in need. And I'll tell you, if each and every one of us did something like that, just helping somebody, even Mother Teresa used to say, that should be your main goal in life. Just help somebody in need and do it. Whoever's closest to you. So whoever is closest to you, and we don't mean that necessarily from an emotional perspective, but even physically, somebody who's physically close to you, if you could do something in a very small way to help that individual, then by gosh darn it, the world would be an incredibly better place in the long run. So that being said, let's go to the Freedom Lines. First up in the queue is Bruce. He's listening on WWOR in New York, New York. Bruce, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. Hello, Bruce. He's up, but no sound. All right, well, listen, I'm going to put Bruce on hold. Bruce, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, there you go. All right, sorry about that. We didn't hear you initially. But, hey, what's happening, Bruce?
Hey, Tom, I've been called for the past 3 days.
Oh, that's all right. Well, this is Mike.
Excuse me?
This is Mike, not Tom.
Oh, Mike, that's right. I'm sorry. You're sitting in for Tom. You're
yes.
a doctor.
You got it. There you
okay.
go. All right, you're
I've
reoriented now.
Now you're on the
right,
same page.
Right, okay. I've been calling for the past 3 days. The first time, hour and a half. Second time, hour and 10 minutes. Today, a little soon. I called a little earlier.
All right.
But let me explain what's going on. I work for a large company. It's a melting pot. Everyone works there of different races. I take my own surveys. Most people haven't been polled for anything. I'm 44 years old. I'm outspoken. I speak to people. And, uh-huh. you know, I do my own little survey.
Sure.
And most people haven't been polled for anything. Anything. I have been polled. Law-abiding citizen, clean record. I haven't been polled.
Okay.
Now, I'm speaking for Black America.
Okay.
I talk to Black America also. So
all
I
right.
speak to the fellas. And most, I would say like 95%, do not agree with how the same-sex marriage is hopping on the bandwagon of the civil rights.
Right, but that's changing, though. A lot of African Americans, I agree with you, initially, there's a large percentage who are against marriage equality, but those numbers seem to be shifting. Why do you think, from your perspective, are you saying this is an African American phenomenon, or why are you against it?
Okay, I'm on my job 19 years.
Uh-huh.
8 years ago, I wouldn't have time for this phone call. People don't have time.
All right, I don't get what you, Bruce, because we got a lot of calls. Just tell me what your issue is, same-sex marriage. Are you for or against it?
I'm for what they're saying, but what I'm saying that is not parallel with the fight of civil rights for, as far as Black people even existing.
All right, well,
to take
well,
care of their family. Totally different levels.
All right, well, listen, this I appreciate your call, Bruce. I got to get to the other callers here. Gave you a few minutes there. I know you waited an hour and a half on the line, but you got to actually be a little bit more prepared in what you want to say and make it a little bit more concise. And also remember who the host is when you talk to them. All right, it's another major faux pas. All right, let's get back to the Freedom Lines at 866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466. We're going to give everybody a chance to say what you have to say, but you got to be a little somewhat cogent and
on the same page.
On the same page with us here. So let's see who's next in the queue. I want to go by the time here. Well, we got Armin. It looks like he's on the line from Bradenton, Florida. I'm not sure what he's calling about, but who cares? Armin, welcome to the table.
Hello, Dr. Mike. How are you today?
Every day's a blessing, Armin. How are you out there in Bradenton, Florida?
I'm trying to stay healthy, happy, and wise. And
there you go.
It's a real challenge with a lot of, I guess you could say, evilly challenged people working against the greater good of all of us.
Did you know that your quote you just mentioned there was a Ben Franklin quote, I believe. It's early to bed, early to rise helps to keep one healthy, wealthy, and wise.
Well, my dad used to say that to me all the time when he'd get up at 5 o'clock.
There you have it.
But anyway, basically, in a nutshell, without being too simplistic, I think the biggest part of our problems, why we just can't move forward as a nation the way we really should be moving forward with all the past historic sacrifice through all the wars and all the economy downturns and everything else, in my opinion, is I call it the triangulation of strangulation. And basically what it is, you know, everything in the economic system has to be of a dynamic nature, and it has to have a balance to be sustainable economically, so that the debt doesn't slow everything down too much, and or we get hyperinflation. So we have to move forward. So what I mean by that is I think basically that there are too many wealthy that are irresponsible, unaccountable, and out of control and have too much influence in our economic and social system. I think there are from time to time too many that are in the public unions that are out of control and sensitive to the people in the private sector that pay the taxes, that pay their wages.
Uh-huh.
And I think there are too many poor and this may sound harsh, but it's a reality, that are irresponsible and unaccountable because somebody picks up the tab and pays for everything, and what they get for free is not free.
All right, well, listen.
All of us.
All right, so, I appreciate that, Armin. That's Armin calling you from Florida, giving his perspective. But I have to disagree with him on that poor thing, Eric, because quite frankly, you know, Armin, I come from a poor background in the sense that my mom and dad were actually poor when they were younger, and that was through no fault of their own. And I know that conservatives often like to espouse this idea of the fat, lazy welfare mama sucking off the teat of the government. But I have to disagree with you on that, Armin, because I know what happened with my family and my mom and dad, and they were at a period during their youth, maybe not all their youth, but I know there was a period when they were on federal subsidies or lived in federal housing, maybe had some food stamps. And guess what? I was very thankful. I'm sure they were more thankful. I wasn't around back then, but I'm sure they were thankful that they got some assistance from their government, and that their government cared enough about them and believed in them as citizens that, hey, here's a little hand up. It's not a hand out, and that's unfortunately how conservatives look at it, as a hand out. I look at it as a hand up. And guess what? My mom and dad got married age 17. My father got a job with the railroad, stayed with the railroad for 43 years, and, you know, from there on out, he worked. My mother ended up working. And guess what? They were in unions, and the unions provided them, you know, stability, a salary that they can count on, benefits that they can count on. And guess what? As a result, my parents were able to spend time with us and keep that nuclear family together. We could actually eat dinners together. We didn't have to worry about mom or dad doing two or three jobs. They can go to the baseball games or to my sister's dance recitals and actually participate in being parents. So I happen to disagree with you on that particular perspective because, you know, I came, like I said, from a family that was under federal subsidies at a point in their lives. They were hardworking. They were thankful for the opportunity that the government gave them to live a better life and to get, you know, a hand up, if you will. The unions gave my family an opportunity to have that nuclear family. And as a result, I was the first in my family ever even to go to college. I was the first to go to medical school and become a doctor. So when I hear people disparage those who were on federal subsidies as poor and lazy and fat, lazy welfare mamas, and disparage the public unions and the union system in this country, I take great offense to that because I happen to come from a background of that, and I know that, you know, not every poor person is looking to get a handout, is getting a free check. As you, Eric, and I talked about, they're not sitting on the welfare hammock, you know, drinking a martini.
Safety net hammock.
Yeah, the safety net hammock that Mitt Romney liked to refer to during the election. You know, a lot of these people just were born that way. And Jesus Christ himself said, you know, you don't judge those people. You know, everybody's God's children. And we should treat everyone with respect and kindness and compassion, and never judge people. You don't know their shoes that they're walking in. You don't know their life circumstances. But the kind thing to do, the compassionate thing to do, is to give those people a hand up. And that's why I love being a progressive. That's why I love being a liberal. And I think conservatives just look at the world through a different lens. Look, the Freedom Lines are packed at 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466. Back with more of your calls in a moment.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Broadcasting live from the Valley's Progressive Talk, 1480 KPHX, Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. It's Bring It On Friday, my friends. So anything and everything is fair game. All you got to do is call the Freedom Lines at 1-866-987-THOM, and we'll get to your calls. Next up in the queue, I believe, is Jason, and he wants to, I believe, talk about gun control or something of that effect. What's happening, Jason?
Hey, you know, you're a doctor, so I was going to kind of use a doctor analogy. You know, if somebody comes into your office and they weigh 300 pounds and they want to lose weight, and you would never say something like, "We'll switch to Sweet and Low," but at the same time, they're eating pints of ice cream and cheesecake, right? Because that would be silly.
Okay.
Well, what's happening today is we are arguing about guns. when the
I thought you were going to say shoot him and put him out of his misery when I saw the gun.
No.
Right,
I'm saying is what we have is we're living in a bizarre world here, where the things that have the greatest effect on making change are the things we ignore, and then we just focus in on superficial things. So my example, I'll give you two. Number one, with the drug war that's going on, okay,
right.
If we were to decriminalize drugs like they did in Portugal and treat it as a medical issue, we would drop the number of gun deaths significantly more than any of this crazy talk about somebody thinking you're going to limit it with a magazine or a gun or something like that.
Right. So what you're saying is the drug war and the gun violence are tied together. They're not mutually
exclusive
things.
Absolutely. That's fact. Okay. Then there's 32,000 people that are killed every year in the United States due to guns. The majority of them are committing suicide with guns. Now, the United States does not have the highest suicide rate. That's actually in Japan, where because people don't have access to guns, even though the rate's higher, what they tend to do is gas themselves and jump in front of public transportation.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so if people are going to kill themselves, they'll find a way to kill themselves. Okay, the Japanese are an example of that. But when it comes to this gun death stuff, it again, we're back to this point of if you really want to make a real change, you have to do what's going to have the greatest effect. Here's another example. We're arguing about carbon taxes and all this stuff about greenhouse gases. Look, the number one cause of greenhouse gas, okay, is the fact that human beings eat a meat-based diet.
True.
The fact that we consume meat is bigger than every form of transportation combined. So
right.
When they keep talking about these carbon taxes, they'll never apply this to agricultural products because if you went in to go buy a steak, what costs $10 today would cost $50 tomorrow. But it would have the greatest impact on this.
Right, right. Move from the quarter pounder at McDonald's to the eighth pounder.
Well, it would just – but the whole point is the costs aren't being – and what we're doing is we're constantly putting things on the scale, but we never do what causes the greatest effect. Now,
all right. Well, listen, I appreciate that, Jason. So what Jason is talking about is looking at the root cause and trying to determine what that is. And if you determine what the root cause is, then that's what should be your strategy. I mean, look, we do that in medicine too. In medicine – if you come to me and you basically have an infection, I don't throw every antibiotic in the book at you. I got to figure out, you know, through a history of physical, some diagnostics, what's happening, and then you tailor that particular antibiotic to the specific disease that you have. That's what he's talking about, not a shotgun approach, but basically,
right.
No pun intended.
Right,
a
bad choice of words.
A bad choice of words, but, you know, trying to find the root cause. So I got you, Jason. So listen, let's get back to the Freedom Lines. Let's see who's next up in the queue holding longest. Let's go to James on the line, listening on Sirius XM from Virginia, and he wants to comment on voter rights and voter fraud and that issue we had referenced earlier in the program. James, welcome.
Hi. Yeah, Mike, thank you for having me on.
Sure.
The interview you had earlier, I can't remember what the name of the woman was, but she had a concern about about laws that would restrict voter access.
Right, Penda Hare was her name.
Always, okay. It always perplexes me because my feeling is that it's not at all difficult to, you know, get a photo ID and to vote. Shouldn't, you know, it really isn't difficult.
Why do you need a voter ID? Why would you need a voter ID? Let me ask you that. Why does anyone need a voter ID? If you're registered to vote, have you ever voted?
Yeah.
All right. And what do you do when you go to the voting booth? When you check in?
Normally, I've only had to check my list, my name off of the list,
right.
And then they'll allow me to.
But don't you need to provide your signature?
Yes.
Every place that I've ever voted, they ask you, you know, who you are, and then you have a little box that you're supposed to sign your name. And by signing your name, you're attesting to the fact that indeed you are who you say you are, and that everybody who's registered to vote has a signature on file somewhere in the system. So if there's voter fraud going on, then all you simply need to do – so in other words, say you're a conservative Republican and you're really worried about voter fraud going on. It's so widespread that it's changing elections. Then all you simply need to do is file a brief with the voting department, okay, the Secretary of State, whoever conducts the election, say, look, I think there's widespread voter fraud going on here. And guess what? You go back, you look at those signatures, and you see, do those signatures match – the actual signatures that we have on record. That's all you need. Why do you need something that's a passport or a birth certificate or, you know, something along those lines. Why don't they just have that? What's wrong with that?
Well, I'm not so sure that it would be timely enough to you know,
it doesn't matter if it's timely. What you could do is you could look
matter.
At it.
My opinion is that it does matter.
The Reverend was on earlier. I don't know if you heard the Reverend. The Reverend said that in North Carolina, they have a book on the law that says, guess what? If you lie and you commit voter fraud, it's a 5-year felony. That I'm okay with that. So in other words, if you go out there and you commit voter fraud,
do you really think that's adjudicated? Do you think that those things are?
It's not a matter of it's adjudicated or not. They should. If it's on the books and it's a law,
any law that doesn't have
they should follow it up. But my point to you is this: I just explained to you how the voting process works, okay? And there's no documented studies from any of these Republican state legislators. They're buffoons because they're just trying to suppress the vote. You don't need an ID to vote. You need a signature. And if you lie, you go to jail, okay? And that's the bottom line. And there's not voter fraud widespread going on in this country. It's simply a concerted effort on behalf of conservative Republicans because they're losing. They're little whiners. They're losing. They don't like to lose. And when they lose, rather than competing and trying to win on a fair level, they want to change the rules and regulations of the game. That's the problem. That's the problem we have, James, and you need to wake up because it happens a lot in your state, too, in Virginia. All right, listen, we're going to be back with more of the Tom Hartman program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in. Stay with us.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome back, my friends. We're going to keep it going right now. Let's bring it on Friday. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman. And Tom will be back on Tuesday, broadcasting Tuesday next week. And then I will be doing Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So in any case, let me give you the number for the Freedom Lines, 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466. So let's keep moving forward. Lots of people on hold right now. Everybody wants to get their say. As I said, bring it on Friday means bring it on. Whatever you want to talk about, it doesn't matter. We're here for you today. So just pick up the phone, give us a shout out, and we'll do our best to get everybody on the air. Okay, I think the first person that I got in the queue right now is Ellen, listening on the internet from Connecticut. So, Ellen, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you very much. First, I want to point out one thing, two things, actually. I don't know whether you realize that Pete Peterson has set up offices in Bridgeport, and I do believe that Foley is going to run for governor again. They're putting full steam ahead to get that Connecticut governorship in their pocket.
Tell us who's Pete Peterson, because a lot of people might not know from Connecticut who's Pete Peterson.
Peterson runs, I can't remember what the name of his PAC is, but he's a huge multi-billion dollar supporter along the lines of the Koch brothers.
Oh, wow. Okay.
For the Republican Party. And
then you guys had Linda McMahon out there, right? The WWF wife. Didn't she try to run for office out there for senator?
She did, and she didn't get it, thankfully, because people are she's very offensive, she's very offensive. She's very crass. She's very crude. She's very offensive, and she's very phony and false and, you know, trying to take on at the last minute the idea that she's very open-minded. Another thing I want to point out to you, the judges in the state of Connecticut, despite the deficit and the great financial problems, have voted themselves have gotten themselves by strong-arm pressure from their cronies and legislator, a $50,000 raise.
Oh, wow.
Claiming that if it's $250,000 is going to be the standard for middle class, that they work so hard and they deserve it more than anybody else. Which I find offensive despite all the reductions everybody else is being asked. And
right.
I'd like to make one final point. I'd like to point out Keith Harmon Snow's article about what is going on in the family court and how the wealthy first wives and first families of Republican men are not even getting child support. They're losing their children, and they are being thrown out impoverished and are losing their homes. And I speak from firsthand experience. I have 4 federal court verdicts that I stand on.
All right. Well, listen, we appreciate your commentary. Thank you, Ellen.
Well, watch Connecticut. It's up, okay?
I'm watching. I was there years ago in Litchfield, beautiful town.
I was there not too long ago.
Yeah, well, it's small town beautiful, if you know what I mean. Just as small town as anywhere else with all its politics and cronyism.
I hear you. All right, well, listen, we thank you, Ellen, for calling in right now. That opens up another Freedom Line at 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466. Let's go next to, I think, Susan on the line, and she's from Santa Cruz, California. Susan, welcome to the Tom Hartman program on Bring It On Friday.
Hey, hello? Dr. Mike.
Hey, Susan.
Hey, Dr. Mike.
Yes.
It's me, Susan, in Santa Cruz.
Hi, Susan.
And I'm really worried about the lack of income for a lot of seniors. And I don't qualify for any kind of CalWORKs or food stamps or anything. My entire income is $874 a month. And my rent to live in a trailer park is right around $500 a month.
Oh, wow.
And this is totally unsustainable.
Sure.
And I have lots of friends in the same boat. We don't qualify for food stamps. I have to eat at the Homeless Services Center soup kitchen for dinner, and we used to get pretty good food there because Trader Joe's donated, but Trader Joe's stopped donating.
How old are you, Susan?
I'm 64.
You're 64 right
and
now.
My other friends are 65. And
are you retired, disabled, still trying to find work but can't? What's your situation?
Well, I had to retire early in 2006 because my hips were so bad they had to be replaced. I had bad osteoarthritis.
Okay.
And now I actually danced for my birthday, April 3rd, with
very
my new
nice.
Hips. So that's good, but I've got some other problems with my feet and my knees, but with arthritis. But, I've got a master's in social work that
right.
I would love to use. I've always wanted to work with children. But where am I going to find a job at 64? Who's going to want to hire me?
Well, they should want to hire you.
I'm really healthy.
64 means you got a lot of wisdom. Means you got a lot of wisdom and experience
too. Right. I do have a lot of wisdom.
So,
and I'm telling you, I wish I went on the Gray Bears. I mean, on the not Gray Bears, but the Gray Panthers website, and it's like they're non-active. We need something like Gray Panthers now for all of us boomers. Otherwise, it's just going to get worse. That's what I'm worried about.
All right, well, let me comment on off the air. So thanks, Susan, for calling in. We appreciate your time.
Okay, great.
All right, there's Susan calling. But look, I mean, she's bringing up a lot of different points, Eric. I mean, first and foremost, poverty in America. We talked about that yesterday. We talked about Martin Luther King Jr. saying that if you really look at poverty, not only in the United States, but you look at it worldwide, we have the technology and the resources to end poverty as we know it. The question is, as Martin Luther King Jr. said, do we have the will? I mean, even worldwide, I saw a study just the other day, Eric. I don't know exactly what the bottom line dollar was, but it was something like $20, $25 billion. Like if we could raise that money and invest it and then just stick with it, you would eradicate poverty
right.
worldwide. I mean, just like Jonas Salk, eradicated polio with the vaccine. If
nobody wants to invest money, Mike, for other people, strangers.
Right, particularly people who are poor and hungry.
Right.
And
it's a shame. It's not just homeless people, apparently, who are going to soup kitchens. These are people who actually have places to live. They just can't afford their food.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. I believe, this is where I believe, yes, individuals need to have accountability and responsibility as much as they can, but there are going to be circumstances where somebody is trying, like you said, very hard. Like in this case, 64 years old, somewhat disabled, had degenerative osteoarthritis, and had to get two bilateral hip replacements. She's got a master's in social work. But the question is, given her age and given the state of the economy, can she get a job? And she might very well go out there and try, but to no avail. So the question is, do we want to live in a society that says, well, tough luck, you should have prepared better, or you should have saved more money, or,
I'd say getting a master's is preparing.
That's what I'm saying. If you invest,
and she probably can't even afford the gas to go around and interview for these jobs.
Right. But the difference is conservatives like to judge those people, Eric. They like to say, well, it's your fault. You didn't plan accordingly. You didn't save money. And like you just said, which is a very good rejoinder, boy, this lady went to 4 years of college and then had to go, you have to go to 4 years of college to get a master's.
Right.
And they have to go an additional 2 years generally to get a master's degree. So you've invested time, you've invested in your education, you've invested in your future, but sometimes life throws you curveballs that you just don't expect. So do.
Like, I don't know that.
Right. You know that too with all the health issues that you just went through recently. So the question goes, what kind of society are we going to be? Are we going to be a society that says we recognize that people sometimes in life experience things that are unplanned for? Sometimes they're catastrophic and they adversely affect our life. Do we say, well, look, you're on your own, sink or swim. That's the way, you know, the world works. Or do we say, guess what? You're a fellow brother and sister. You are a patriot. You are an American. You're a human being. Actually, I would even say forget about all the nationalistic, patriotic stuff. I look at it from the perspective as a physician that we're all human beings. We're all given the gift of life and that we should do whatever we can to help our brothers and sisters and give them that hand up, if you will. But that's the big debate that we have in this country right now. You have many conservative Republicans who say, guess what? I don't care about those people, and you're on your own, versus the liberals and the progressives. We believe in we the people. We believe that we the people, in order to form a more perfect union, sounds a lot better than I the individual, in order to form a more perfect me. So therein lies, again, a big difference between liberals and conservatives.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Broadcasting live from Phoenix, Arizona, this is Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, and you're listening from 1480 KPHS. All righty, welcome back. It is Bring It On Friday. The Freedom Lines are open right now. Let's get to the callers at 1-866-987-8466. I believe first up in the queue, let's see, who's holding the longest? I like to go who's holding the longest. It would be... Is Terry holding the longest? Yes, it would be Terry from Pahrump, Nevada. How do you say that, Terry?
It's Pahrump. Sounds like there should be a rim shot directly following it.
Like
it?
That song, Pahrump, bump, 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 bump. There you have it.
Actually, I'm a transplanted Phoenician, so I do want to say real quickly, I appreciate seeing you, and every time you're on, I make sure to call Tom and thank him for making you part of the program.
Well, thank you. We appreciate that. We are a liberal oasis in the desert of conservatism here in Phoenix, Arizona. So,
oh, trust me, Bruce Jacobs was still on the air when I left, so I know.
Aye, vey.
What I called to talk about is probably going to interest a small amount of people, and I apologize for that, but I am a convicted felon who has done time in prison, and under the, you know, friends close and enemies closer thing, I do occasionally watch the so-called news network, you know, so I can be informed about how I'm going to have to prepare when I go into the bars for my arguments.
Sure.
And I've been paying attention to their complaint about the lady who was the weatherman lady who was convicted of murder, who's now teaching at Columbia University.
Okay.
And they're just making such a big stink about it, you know, and I was wondering, if when she had gone to prison, she had become a Christian, got her divinity license, and went to work for Liberty University after
right.
she got out of prison,
right.
what would the argument, you know, they would have held her up as one of the great rebuilding things in the history of America.
I know.
And it's just so hypocritical. It's so hypocritical for them to complain about her teaching an elective course in a private university that absolutely no one is ever forced to take.
Right.
Plus, bottom line, you do your time, you're a good person after you get out, you
sure.
should be left alone and be allowed to do whatever you feel.
Look, Terry,
as long as you continue to live on the straight and narrow.
Look, Terry, I agree 100% with you, because look, the bottom line is, like you said, you're a convicted felon, and we don't need to go into whatever happened with you, but the bottom line is, you know,
everyone goes to prison for the same thing, a bad decision.
Right. So that, exactly, that was what I was going to say, distill it down to that you made a mistake, and whatever the mistake was that you made, you went through the jurisprudence system, you had a fair trial, you were given your constitutional rights to, you know, be heard by a judge or a jury or whatever, and then you were sentenced and given, you know, your penalty. And that's the way the system works. And once you complete your penalty, then you get a clean slate. And not only is that great in our democracy. But if you think about it, a lot of these conservative Republicans, Harry, say that they, oh, this should be a Christian nation. Well, isn't that what Jesus Christ was about? Is that, you know, if you repent for your sins, if you really repent and look for forgiveness and you've changed your life and you've, you know, adopted a new spirit, a new approach to your, to the blessing that you're given, then you are renewed. Right?
That's the whole basis of my point. They're so hypocritical.
Right, exactly. You know, that's what baptism is. Isn't baptism supposed to symbolize the forgiveness
original
of sin, of original sin? And so it's the same thing. You know, if you sin, you know, look, I grew up Catholic. I used to sin all the time. But the great thing was I can go to confession every Sunday, and I got a clean slate every week. So it was perfect.
One other real quick point on an unrelated subject. The other complaint today I've been hearing on the conservative outlets is when it comes to the same-sex marriage, that you should not be allowed to redefine. Well, my argument would be it's already been redefined. If you read the Old Testament, they all had more than one wife. It wasn't until the New Testament that
sure.
It became one man, one woman. So it's A, been redefined once, and B, it was far, far, far longer throughout the history of mankind that it has not been one man, one woman, that it has been.
Well,
so the tradition argument is based in an unrealistic, unfactual.
And not only that, and I agree with you. I agree with 100% with respect. This is Harvey, right? No, this is Terry. All right, Terry. No, Terry, but I agree with you in the sense that, you know, you can't always even just say because something is tradition that it's sacrosanct. Because we could say technically, right, well, look, it was tradition for slavery, and the way that property was defined, it was that a white man could own a black person. And that was tradition.
And it was part of their economy.
And it was part of the economy. Or we could say, hey, tradition was that, you know, a woman is supposed to just shut up, not be heard, not be seen, don't say anything, and guess what? You don't vote. That's the tradition, you know? So you can't always invoke the argument that just because something was quote unquote, and I put those in quotation marks, tradition sometimes is wrong. And sometimes you got to wake up and smell the coffee and say, tradition is not right. Tradition is not consistent with liberty and freedom, and it's not consistent with our Constitution. And that's the whole debate right now with marriage equality. Listen, very good conversation. Appreciate
it,
Terry.
Thank you for putting it in words better than mine, and keep fighting the good fight. And again, it's a pleasure to hear you, sir.
All right. Thank you, sir. All right. That's Terry, a convicted felon who actually did his time. It sounds like a very reasonable man to me,
yes,
Eric.
I think he learned his lesson.
You know, everybody needs a second chance in life. You know, I mean, that's
a mulligan.
Yeah. Everybody needs a mulligan. We should start a mulligan law.
Actually, there's a place here in Phoenix called Mulligan's Manor. That's why I said that.
Is it?
It's for second chance for youth.
Yeah. But you get all these laws that say Casey's Law and this law. Let's get a mulligan law out there. Everyone gets one mulligan, one transgression.
Instead of three strikes and you're out, let's get a mulligan.
Right. Three strikes and a mulligan.
Right.
And that way, people have a little better shot at things. All right, let's get back to the Freedom Lines at 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466. It's Bring It On Friday. Anything and everything is fair game. Next up in the queue, I think it is Harvey now. Harvey's listening on the internet from Berkeley, California. What's up, Harvey?
Hi, Mike. Well, great show today.
Thank you, sir.
I'd like to talk about saving America's precious water resources. And it turns out that coal-fired, oil-fired, natural gas, and nuclear power plants are second only to agriculture in the daily use of water. And these power plants also create CO2 that are diminishing are creating the greenhouse gas effect, that are diminishing the snow caps on our mountaintops, which is another resource of fresh water. And at the same time, they're melting the polar caps, which are giving rise to the ocean rising up. So they're really bad. But at the same time, the good news is that photovoltaic solar panels use no water over the 20-year warranty of their life. So
wow, interesting.
So it's time to get star-powered, and I say let's get solar.
Let's get solar. All right, listen, you got the last word on that, Harvey. Thanks for calling in from Berkeley, California.
Thank you.
Okay, stay with us. The Freedom Lines are open. Back with more of the Tom Hartman program in a moment.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Alrighty, welcome back, my friends. Bring It On Friday. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman. The Freedom Lines are packed right now, so let's get to them at 1-866-987-8466. Anything you want to talk about is fair game. Let's go next in the queue to Jeff. And Jeff is in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, my home state, PA. Welcome to the table, Jeff.
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. How are these Eagles going to do this year?
Well, they're working on four quarterbacks, so I don't know.
Unbelievable, unbelievable. But we still got Vic, though, right?
Yeah, we still got Vic, but I don't know, man. I think, really, he did get a bad rap because I saw him take some hits that were just unbelievable, and the refs should have called it, but that's
no, I agree. I think they were a little bit lax in enforcing the rules and regulations with respect to
that. Absolutely, and you being a physician, when you actually see a player's head bounce off the ground 2 to 3 times, that can't be good for the brain.
No, it's a brutal sport. And look, that's why you're seeing so many, not only concussions, but you're seeing the adverse effects of people who played in the NFL for a long time with, like, dementia and degenerative brain diseases.
I don't even think we know the half of it, of our former.
I agree. What about boxing?
Dementia units, which both of my parents are, by the way.
No, that's all. It's all head trauma. So anyway, what's on your mind today, Jeff?
The reason I'm calling is I supported Obama. I worked for Obama. I donated money to Obama. And first, I would like you have to, if you could clarify this for me, with the Social Security, I'm a Social Security disability, and I'm a 100% disabled Vietnam vet. Okay, PTSD and cancer.
Well, sorry to hear that.
I was when I got the news, too, because I always denied with the PTSD people. You say, I think you have that. And then other people would say, I don't think you have it because you weren't in a combat unit. Well, I was shotgun on a truck. Let me tell you something. If you get ambushed, you roll out of that truck, you're infantry real quick. Or just many things can get it. But the reason, I guess, what I have to have clarified is this grand bargain that Obama is going to take to the Republicans and have, is it just the CPR, you know, the cost of living, rather, or is he talking about cutting other benefits as well?
Yeah, you know what, Jeff, this is kind of breaking news to me as well, and what I'll do is I'll give you a commitment, because next week I'll be covering for Tom 2 the whole week except Tuesday, and I'll speak to the executive producer, and I think this is a good topic to really flush out, because I don't really know what the details are. I mean, I know I'm hearing...
I just heard it on your news.
Yeah, you know, and I did too.
Like, I guess that was you that gave the... But I can't believe that this guy, who seemed to be so much for veterans, would now want to... And I feel sorry for the older lady that called her and lives in a trailer.
Right,
you know,
right, 64 with a master's.
She can't get a job.
I know. Look, it's a very touchy topic, and the bottom line is, you know, we will investigate it. I will definitely get some experts on next week, and we will, you know, have the fors and against. But the bottom line is this, and I think this is the premise that most progressives embrace, is that Social Security is not an entitlement. It's something that all of us have paid into, so it is a benefit. So we expect that benefit to be there.
I had to pay double because I had my own business.
Right.
I know, on FICA, whatever that all involves, what all taxes.
Right.
And so it isn't really an entitlement.
Right, exactly.
It is, but it shouldn't be classified as such. I just don't understand my president that I love so much.
I love the president too, but before I judge the president, I'm definitely going to get the facts first, and then at that point, I could render a decision. So, but listen, Jeff, I appreciate it, and just as we conclude here, EAGLES, Eagles!
Go, Eagles! Super Bowl this year!
All right, brother. See you later.
Okay, bro.
All right, Jeff from Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania's just crazy, crazy sports town, and loved growing up there in Philadelphia. I grew up in South Philly, actually, where Rocky was filmed. It was literally, I was on 9th and Winton Street. So
he runs up the stairs. And
over at the Art Museum, so that was filmed there. But then I also, in my neighborhood, there was a scene. I don't know if you remember the movie, but it was the kids hanging on the street corner, which is what we really did back in the day. We used to hang on the street corners.
With a barrel with a fire in it at night?
Some people would do that, too. Yeah, I didn't really do that a whole lot. But there are people. That was Rocky's brother, actually, who was singing the do-do-do-do, take it back. But there was a girl in the scene where Rocky walks her home, and then she goes up onto the step and says, "Hey, Rocky, F you," or something like that. But that whole scene was 2 blocks from where I lived. And when you see this scene, to the right was the convent. I went to a grade school called Epiphany of Our Lord, and there was convents back then. You don't see convents anymore with nuns. but they razed that building since then. But that's exactly where it took place. It was, I think, 1976 was when the movie came out. So
yeah.
I must.
And at that time, I was in a military school run by a convent of nuns.
Was it?
Yeah.
You said convicts?
Convent.
Oh, convent. Okay, convent. Well, that's military school. Yeah, but the nuns, I'll tell you, the nuns back in the day, Eric, they were a bad, you know what. I mean, they didn't
Mammer jammers.
They didn't take any crap from you at all. I mean, I know today,
they used to beat you.
They beat the crap out of you. I remember Sister Josephine Dolores back in the day, JD they used to call her, big hulking, nun who must have been easily 220, 250, and if you messed around with JD, she would have you come up into the room, and basically you'd have to put your hands out, and she'd wrap you in your knuckles or this or that. And this is one kid who used to always get beat up, and we just watched him in the middle of the class and just like prayed that it would stop. But they believed in corporal punishment,
absolutely, they'd humiliate you by doing it in front of all your classmates.
Yeah, I mean, it was a completely different time back then, and whether or not that's the way to go, probably not. I don't think so. I remember when my wife and I took our kids, we were looking for a school for them to go, and one of them was some type of Christian school or whatnot. But they show you the application, and on the application, it actually had a sort of disclaimer or something where that you not
you
a
will
disclaimer,
beat your child,
right? Like in other words, you had to sign away the right that if your kid needs to be disciplined with corporal punishment, that they reserve the right to do that.
So you said not this school.
No, we didn't tend to go to that school. I'm not going to go to a school that allows my
beat your children.
Right? What are they going to do?
I would never ever subject my children to what I went through.
And what if
at
they
that military school?
No, absolutely not. And what if the corporal punishment to them was a Christian? Like a crown of thorns.
Like crucifying.
Right. I go back and my kid's
nailed
like
to a cross.
Nailed to a cross or something like that. It's like, well, you shouldn't have done that, Junior.
A little placard above his head that says King of the Newcomers.
INXS or something like that. No, I don't believe in that type of approach. I mean, I really do believe more of the carrot and less of the stick. But that's another difference between conservatives and liberals to a certain extent. They really believe in the stick approach, and we're more of the carrot approach.
Stone you if they could.
Right, exactly. All right, let's get back to the Freedom Lines right now. It is at 1-866-987-THOM. Tom, 1-866-987-8466. Let me get my reader glasses back on because my eyes are getting bad as I age here. And next up in the queue is going to be Sam calling from Chicago, Illinois. Sam, what's happening?
Hey, I have a mixed question / statement. Abe Lincoln, a Republican, in his Gettysburg Address.
Yes.
A country by the people, for the people, and of the people.
Uh-huh.
I don't get why the Republicans are against Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid when those are the programs that are by the people, for the people, and of the people.
Well, because
they
don't believe in that, Sam. Honest to God. I mean, when you really look at the different ideologies today, if you will, the liberal ideology versus the conservative ideology, liberals believe in what the founding fathers said, that we are all created equal, we are all one nation, we the people, in order to form a more perfect union. Conservatives really look at the world through the lens, the filter, if you will, of me, I the individual. It's all about selfishness, it's about individuality, versus the liberal perspective is that, guess what, we're all in this together, we're a great country, we're a human species, and our strength is not necessarily only in our individuality, but it's actually in our solidarity as brothers and sisters, okay? And that really is the big difference. And look, the bottom line is this. When it comes to Medicare and it comes to Social Security, you're talking about trillions of dollars of revenue a year. And what the GOP believes is that that revenue stream, the trillions of dollars of revenue stream, is better off in the pockets of investors and bankers and the corporate world and in the financial sector versus liberals and Democrats and progressives. We believe that those trillions of dollars of revenue are better off serving the people in the form of getting them health care, getting them access to nursing care, getting them access to drugs and things that are going to ameliorate their disease and their cancers and things like that. So that's why they're against it, because their constituency and their belief system is such that they believe money is best off in the pockets of investors and corporations, versus we believe that our public money, our tax dollars, our common fund, if you will, is better served in utilizing that cash to help our fellow brothers and sisters. And it's a fundamental difference. And look, they've won a lot of elections in the past with that philosophy. But I think times are changing, Sam. I think times are changing, and I think people are seeing it more our way and not their way.
Yeah, let's hope gets better soon. But
it'll get better. Keep the faith, Sam. Listen, I appreciate you calling. Thanks a lot.
All right, have a good one.
All right, there you have it. It's Sam calling in from Illinois. And open up another Freedom Line here at 1-866-987-8466. That's 1-866-987-THOM. Still got Carol on the line from Colorado, Jerry from Michigan, Jack from Florida, Zach from Illinois, all over the country, Robert, South Carolina, Jim, Ohio. Everybody, we're going to get to your calls when we get back, so stay with us. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Broadcasting from the desert here in Phoenix, Arizona, 1480 KPHX. This is Dr. Mike Newcomb substituting for Tom Hartman. Okay, welcome back, my friends. This is Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting for Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. As always, we have a very special guest for this particular part of the program, and her name is Victoria Jones. She's with Talk Radio's new service. So without further ado, let's get right to Victoria. Victoria, how are you doing today?
Well, thank you very much. How are you?
Every day is a blessing, Victoria.
Indeed, you're so right. You're so right. The U.S. economy added 88,000 jobs last month. That's not robust. In fact, it's the fewest in 9 months. It had been anticipated that the U.S. would add 190,000 jobs in March. So this is not considered good. Unemployment fell to 7.6%, but that's partly because 496,000 people left the workforce. So the slowdown is a reminder that the job market is fragile and that the path back to full health is going to be tricky and up and down.
Let me ask you this. Maybe it's too early to tell, Victoria, but does the sequester have anything to do with this quite yet, or maybe not?
Well, it depends who you ask. The White House indicated in its statement from Alan Krueger today that they think that it does, and a lot of people are saying that they think that the sequester does. My read on it, and I'm not an economist, and I didn't do very well in math, but my read is this. Actual numbers from the sequester, federal employees had to get 30 days notice before they were going to be fired or furloughed. So those actual cuts really didn't come into effect until the beginning of April. So I think we'll see much more effect in April. But I think we may have seen some effect in the government numbers.
Right.
But private businesses, I think, were getting spooked by the
sequester. Yeah, that's what I was going to say, the confidence factor.
Yes. So I think it did have that impact. I think it had the spookiness impact.
Interesting. All right, what else we got on the table today?
President Obama's budget comes out next Wednesday. Some journalists got a sneak peek of it yesterday evening. It appeared in the papers today. So Jay Carney, the president's spokesman, was asked questions about that, including about apparently the president intends to propose chained CPI, and he was asked a question about whether there would be details in the budget, and he promised that it would be so much more detailed than anything that the Republicans have proposed. That's a reference to how the Republicans never specify cuts, but it will blow your mind. Now, progressive groups and lawmakers, including Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont, Independent, and Representative Jerry Nadler, Democrat of New York, are blasting the Obama administration for proposed cuts to Social Security and other programs that are expected to be in the budget next week. Jerry Nadler saying that he's concerned that it might include chained CPI and other accommodations to Republicans determined to dismantle our social safety net and the progress our nation has made since the New Deal.
Interesting. Now, Victoria, tell our listening audience what the CPI, the consumer price, and the chain CPI, what that particularly means.
Okay. So this is way above my pay grade. As I said, didn't do very well in math, but and you can Wikipedia it. But effectively, what it means is that when you calculate how Social Security goes up, it's supposed to go up with the cost of inflation.
Correct.
And with change CPI, effectively what it means is that it goes up slower than inflation, so you end up getting less.
Right, right. So that's, in essence, it'd be a cut to the Social Security benefit.
Yes.
Okay, interesting. Well, I'm sure we're going to hear this flushed out a lot more over the next week, and we'll probably try to get some guests on next week to explain it a little bit further, because like you, I am not an economist and not necessarily an expert on that topic.
No, but it's, we're going to hear a lot about that next week. Also today, a district federal court judge overturned the Obama administration's ban against women under 17 purchasing over-the-counter emergency contraception without a prescription, describing the restriction as a strong showing of bad faith and improper political influence. Judge Edward Corman directed the FDA to lift the ban within 30 days, saying the decisions of the Secretary of Health and Human Services with respect to Plan B One Step were arbitrary, capricious, and unreasonable.
Wow, it's a very strong ruling there. Now, let me ask you this, Victoria, because that's the other question that I have. I know now it'll be over-the-counter, and obviously teenagers could access this over-the-counter without a prescription, but is there a age limit? I mean, can anybody get it? Can a 10-year-old go out there and get this over-the-counter, or how is it working?
Well, there's a lot of questions about that. First of all, we don't know whether the administration's going to appeal. I was at the White House briefing today. That was asked.
Right.
Department of Justice is reviewing that. So second of all, we don't know whether it would just be over the counter or whether they'd find a way around that to make it so that you have to go and ask the pharmacist for it.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, we don't know whether the drug companies would price it so much that a teenager wouldn't be able to afford it.
Yeah, I think as a doctor, I think they should definitely have access to it, but I'm not quite sure, you know, if anybody, it's not like a lollipop, like a, you go in and just, you know, purchase it. I would have to think there are some type of, you know, standards for that, but I don't know, so we'll find out.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And finally, the White House is planning a gun control blitz next week. President Obama, Vice President Biden, and First Lady Michelle Obama will all hold events in different places to build momentum for the Senate gun control package that is expected to come up as lawmakers return to Washington from the Easter recess.
Excellent, excellent. And that legislation in Connecticut, are they going to be talking about that you know of?
The president is going to Hartford and will meet with families of Sandy Hook victims on Monday.
Oh, okay. So excellent. So they're going to talk about that. All right. Well, listen, Victoria, we're coming up on the end of the segment. As always, it's very engaging and exciting to talk to you. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.
Okay. There you have it. Victoria Jones with Talk Radio News Service giving us an update, little pearls of wisdom and nuggets of information that's happening across the country. We still got the Freedom Lines open. I haven't forgot about everybody. It is Bring It On Friday. So definitely stay in the queue. Keep your spot there. And once I get the opportunity, I'm going to go right to you guys in the order that you called it. No specific preference. So stay with us.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome back to hour number three, my friends. We are here live broadcasting from 1480 KPHX in the desert of Phoenix, Arizona. We have a very special guest on the line right now, and I will get to the Freedom Lines. I know we got a lot of people parked in the queue right now, but just bear with us. We will definitely get to your calls. I know you've been very patient, but we do have on the line right now as we speak Mark Potok, and Mark is a senior fellow at the Southern Poverty Law Center, and he also is the editor-in-chief of the SPLC's intelligence report as well as its Hate Watch blog, and he's here today to talk to us about white supremacists. So without further ado, Mark, welcome to the table.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you. Hey, Mark, we're broadcasting here from Phoenix, Arizona, and there was a journalist that used to work out here, and she moved out there to be with the Southern Poverty Law Center. I don't know if she's there anymore. Do you have Susie Buchanan out there?
Susie used to work for me. She later went on to Mexico, and now she's back home where she came from in Alaska.
Ah.
So she's out of our business anyway.
All right. Well, I was just going to say, if she was there, give her our regards. But in any case, hey, so tell us, you know, what's happening? We're hearing a lot of news nationwide about these killings of deputies and law enforcement officials, and it appears as though this is a coordinated effort, perhaps, with respect to white supremacists. So what's the lowdown?
Well, I'm not sure it's a coordinated effort, but it's been quite a series of circumstances. I mean, basically, we've had two sets of killings, one in Colorado and one in Texas. In Texas, a prosecutor in a fairly rural county called Kaufman County was murdered back on January 31st, and then just a couple of weekends ago, his boss, the Kaufman County District Attorney, Mike McClellan, and his wife were also killed. All of these killings look essentially like assassinations. There's a lot of reasons, which we can go into a little later, to suspect that, or at least believe it's possible, that the Aryan Brotherhood of Texas, a white supremacist prison gang, may have been involved in these killings. That's not known, absolutely, but there's a suspicion that that's so. At the same time, around the same time, a little later actually, most recently we saw the murder of the chief of the Colorado Department of Corrections at his home in Colorado by a man who turned out to be a member of white supremacist gang, for sure in this case, a gang in Colorado called the 211 Crew. So,
right.
You know, this has gotten all kinds of attention.
And that in that particular
in because,
that
you know,
particular
yeah, go
what
on.
I was going to say, that particular one, wasn't that where they went right to his house and like put a bullet right in his head in front of his front door? Is that correct?
In Colorado, yeah. It's unclear exactly what happened, but what is believed is that the killer, a man named Evan Abel, actually 2 days earlier in Denver,
uh-huh.
ordered a pizza, shot and killed the pizza delivery man, took his shirt and the pizza box, and used that to approach the correctional chief, Tom Clements, home in Monument. Now, the business about the pizza uniform is not known definitively, but that's what it looks like. Tom Clements opened his door and was murdered right there on the threshold of his home. So it was really quite something. We know Evan Ebel, this man, was the killer because although he fled right away and there was not much evidence, not much good from the witnesses in terms of finding him, he appeared a couple of days later in Texas. Some officers there tried to pull him over. He got into a shootout with them in a long chase. Crashed his car, jumped out of the car, and was killed eventually by police. After they killed him, they found that the gun he'd been using to shoot at police in Texas was in fact precisely the same weapon which killed Tom Clements in Colorado. So we know that Clements was killed by a member of a white supremacist gang from Colorado.
Right.
In the case of the Texas prosecutors, we really don't know that, but there's some real interesting things that suggest that they might have.
Now, let me ask you this, Mark. What is the motive behind this? Because I know, correct me if I'm wrong, but the people who were murdered, they weren't people of color, correct?
Yeah, they were not. And not only that, but it's worth saying about these prison gangs in general that they are white supremacists. They have names like the Aryan Brotherhood of Texas, and so on. But they are fundamentally criminal enterprises with a fairly thin overlay of white supremacist ideology. So they're really criminal syndicates.
Right.
Most of these gangs are heavily involved in running methamphetamine and other drugs, and that is certainly the case with the Aryan Brotherhood of Texas, which has a multimillion dollar business doing that kind of thing. There's no racial motivations in these killings, but it is in some ways difficult to understand the motivation of the killings, even if you think that somehow this is these prison gangs getting even with people they don't like, prosecutors and corrections officials. And I say that because it seems perfectly obvious that if, in fact, these gangs turn out to be behind these killings in Texas, the entire weight of the criminal justice establishment will come crashing down on their heads. They'll be starting a war they can't win in the end. So it's difficult to say what's going on, but it's certainly got a lot of people's attention.
But it's also, is it not sort of sending a chill to some people, too? I saw a headline about a Texas prosecutor who actually quit a white supremacist case and seems to have been intimidated by what was happening.
That's right. And actually, it was a federal prosecutor. But, yes, he quit and said he was quitting for out of concerns of security. I mean, in part, what that tells you is how very scary these groups are. In the case of the Aryan Brotherhood of Texas, the group's members have carried out, since the gang's formation in the early 1980s, more than 100 murders and at least 10 kidnappings. You know, we're talking about a gang that may number 2,500 people or so. That's a lot of mayhem. So, you know, they are very scary people. They are known to be ruthless in a number of different ways. They've been involved in things like torture, murders. At one point, the Aryan Brotherhood of Texas sent out someone to murder another person who was thought to be cooperating with law enforcement, and the killer was ordered to come back with the severed finger of the victim as a trophy to the gang. So that gives you some sense of what this outfit is really like.
How are the authorities in both the states of Colorado and Texas responding to this recent spate of murders or assassinations?
There are huge investigations going on in both states. You know, there are a lot of questions in Colorado about whether this Evan Ebel guy, this member of the 211 crew, was acting alone or not. They a couple of days ago put out, or actually yesterday, put out a notice saying they were looking for two more members of the 211 crew, although they seemed to downplay the idea that these guys were also involved in the killings. They just wanted to talk to them. They, pardon me, they knew these two had been friendly with Evan Ebel, that kind of thing.
Sure.
Today they actually captured one of those two men. We don't know what may come out of that, but I think the question, the operative question in Colorado was this a hit ordered by gang leaders?
Right.
Or was, in fact, this Evan Ebel character, you know, some sort of sociopath sort of operating on his own, which
sure.
may well have been the case.
Now, Mark, tell the listening audience, too, because I know you do your Hate Watch blog, ever since President Barack Obama was elected and now reelected, have we seen an increase in the number of hate groups popping up throughout the country, or has there been stagnant numbers? Or
No, there's been an enormous growth in groups on the radical right in general since Barack Obama appeared on the scene. The most explosive growth hasn't been in hate groups, but among the so-called patriot groups, the groups we all used to call militias back in the 1990s.
Right.
And just to give our listeners a sense of what we're really talking about, in 2008, there were 149 of these militia organizations or patriot organizations. By last year, 2012, 4 years later, that number had reached 1,360. It went up 813%. And yes, I think this is very much a reaction to the election of our first, and then the re-election, of course, of our first black president, and even more what he represents. It's not kind of hating the one black man in the White House. It's the...
All right, gotcha. All right, listen, Mark, we got to run right now because we're up against the break, but we appreciate your time on here. Thank you. It's Mark Potok, senior fellow from the Southern Poverty Law Center. We're going to be back with your calls and the Freedom Lines in just a moment.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Dr. Mike Nuka, broadcasting from 1480 KPHX. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Okay, welcome back, my friends. It is now 20 minutes after the hour. We're going to go right to the Freedom Lines right now. They're packed, and we're riding bareback, Eric, for the remainder of the program, which means no further guests. It's just me,
okay,
you, and the listening audience.
I thought it meant something totally different.
No, that's exactly what it means. All right, so let's go first to Jerry on the line from Detroit, Michigan. Jerry, welcome to the program. Jerry just dropped himself there. Okay, well, then let's go next to Jack on the line from Florida. And, Jack, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, thank you. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Jack. I'm doing well. You want to talk about same-sex marriage, right?
That's right.
All right. Are you engaged to get married to somebody from the same sex?
No. I don't think I'll ever do anything like that. I'm against same-sex marriage.
Oh, I thought you were actually calling to actually do a shout-out to your fiancé.
No, I'm against same-sex marriage because it's morally wrong, physically wrong, and biologically wrong.
Right, right. Now, what do you, are you, do you have gay friends, Jack, at all or no?
No.
No?
I know some gay people, but I don't have friends, no.
No? And now, when you say you know them, though, but they're not your friends, like you don't hang out with them, you don't go to the bar, you don't, like, you know, tickle each other, nothing like that?
No.
No? Huh. Interesting. Would you be receptive to meeting a gay person to be, not to, I'm not saying to have a relationship, but to just become a friend?
No, I'm not interested in that type of friendship.
I mean,
I know some who are elected officials. I know some of them. I've been in politics. I know them, but I think their activity is totally wrong. And yeah. I think President Obama, he insulted the black community when he tried to compare their agenda with the civil rights movement.
But don't you think that that is part of the civil rights movement for equality? I mean, that's what it all is, no equality and justice under the law.
No more than incest, bestiality, or polygamy.
So you equate homosexuality with bestiality, polygamy, and incest?
Yes.
Now, how do you come to that conclusion?
That's a big leap.
They're all deviations. Okay, let's go back. Let's go back to what my first premise is: morally wrong. Uh-huh. Ain't no religion really endorses. Biologically wrong, they can't produce anything. Physically wrong, the parts just don't fit. It's just dumbing down society. If you substitute incest, polygamy, bestiality, take out homosexuality, you can put the same causes can be made.
Uh-huh.
Same thing can be said. So if you do it for them, you won't have to do it for the other group.
Yeah, well, I'd have to say I respectfully disagree with you and don't necessarily share your sentiments with respect to that, because this is all about equality, and I think I do agree with, you know, President Barack Obama's view on that, you know, this is a civil rights issue, and that as long as they're not bothering you, look, you might not agree with it, and you might not, you know, want to have gay friends, as we just talked about, but it doesn't mean that you should deny them equal protections and equal access under our law and our Constitution. I mean,
are you open to giving incest people the same and bestiality people and polygamy people the same rights that you so-called civil rights that you want to say homosexual?
No, because I think the difference here is that consent. When you have two consenting adults who actually believe and love each other, that's a whole lot different than like me trying to get it on with my dog, because I don't think my dog consents
to that. Or your
daughter,
which
is
illegal.
Daughter, right. And I don't think my daughter would, you know, appreciate that either. So what you're talking about are apples and oranges. We're talking about two people who love one another, who are monogamous.
The same thing can be said for somebody who's involved in an incest relationship or a polygamy relationship.
Well, look, like I said, many of those relationships are, practically all of them are not consensual. The people who are involved in those relationships are often coerced and, you know, threatened and don't do that. So, but listen, in any case, I do appreciate your call and you got your perspective out there. So thanks a lot. And, you know, hopefully one day you'll find a gay friend and you'll change your mind. Okay, there he is.
Or maybe he'll have a gay child and change his mind.
Right, like Magic Johnson just did, right? He's talking about the African-American community. That's another.
Yeah, I mean, of all people, you'd think a black person would understand bigotry.
Right, and civil rights and stuff. But it seems like everybody's kids are coming out gay nowadays. I think, you know, it's going to be like in 25 years from now, you're going to walk into like, you know, public establishments and restaurants and things like that. And if you're straight, you're going to be like an outlier. It's going to be like really, you know, it's you're going to be the minority.
You're going to be the one discriminated against.
Exactly. Then you'll see how it is to walk in those people's shoes. But in any case, I saw a quote on Facebook, a little post today, Eric, and it was actually John Lennon and Yoko Ono, and they were standing outside, I don't know if it was their house or whatnot, but they have a placard that's they're just holding, and it says, "Don't hate what you don't understand." And that's exactly what I just thought of when I talked to this gentleman in Florida, is that, you know, he's hating something that he doesn't really understand.
Right. He's ignorant of the true facts.
Right.
And he doesn't want to know the true facts.
And that's often what really drives hate and discrimination and bigotry is the fear of the unknown.
And ignorance, yeah.
Right. And then once you know it, look, growing up, I didn't know a lot of gay people, to be honest with you. And environment that I grew up wasn't very gay friendly, quite frankly. It was like kind of a virile South Philly Italian kind of the man, you know, was the big thing. And a lot of the guys that I grew up with really had a major
aversion
and dislike. Well, I wouldn't even call it aversion. Some of the things they said are very repulsive and repugnant. But I didn't really grow up with a lot of gay individuals. But then when I went to college and I went to New York University, I was 17 years old, teenager, freshman, and I was a philosophy major. Didn't hang out with a lot of pre-meds, but turned out a lot of the friends that I hung out with were from the Tisch School of the Arts. And, you know, oftentimes in the arts, you run into a lot of people who are...
Are you stereotyping?
No, I'm not stereotyping. It's probably a fact. I bet you there's more...
I agree with you. I bet you there's more gay
people in the arts than there are, you know, in other things. But in any case, that was like my first exposure. And you know what? I didn't know a lot about gay individuals, but getting to know them and hanging
I've
out with them...
I've never had a problem. Ever.
You know what? You can make an argument they're a lot more fun than some heterosexuals are. I can tell you that. But once you get to know, then you're not ignorant, and therefore you don't hate. It's all about opening up your heart, opening up your mind, and I suggest the guy from Florida do as such. Okay, back in a moment.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome back. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in here for Tom Hartman. As many of you now know, Tom is in Germany this week. He is with an organization called Salem International. And just in case if you don't know about it, it's a phenomenal organization. It's a non-denominational Christian not-for-profit welfare organization that was founded back in 1957 by a gentleman, a good friend, a dear friend of Tom's, who has since passed away. His name is Gottfried Müller, and he and a bunch of friends in Stuttgart, Germany, created this organization. And the name of the organization, Salem, is from the Hebrew word shalom, which means peace. So anything that Salem does, any of the projects that they are affiliated with, it's all based on the shared values of peace and helping those in need and respect for life. So kudos to Tom as he's out there with kindred spirits celebrating the good work that they do. And this was a legacy that Gottfried Müller wanted to leave behind. He insisted that all the people, the volunteers of this organization, meet once a year in Germany to share stories, camaraderie, to share a good glass of wine, if you will, or maybe even a beer in Germany.
A Stein.
And just to talk about, you know, the future and how they can continue to do such great, great work to help those who are the least of thee, if you will. So thanks a lot, Tom Hartman, for doing that. Okay, let's get back to the Freedom Lines right now. Let's go first in the queue, I think. Let's see, who's holding the longest? Let's go to Manny. Manny's on the line from Rio Rancho, Nuevo Mexico. Manny, welcome to the program.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you, sir.
All righty. I wanted to talk about, you did said a couple times during the program that the Founding Fathers stood for equality for all. And I'm not sure that that's true. You have to remember that these people were rich, white, male landowners.
Right.
And Thomas Jefferson, actually, the one who, I mean, obviously wrote the Declaration of Independence, you know, we were all created equal. He actually owned slaves.
Sure.
And so I don't think that that stands a valid point for equality. And don't get me wrong, I definitely...
No, I don't disagree with you, Manny. I don't disagree with you on that point. There was a definite hypocrisy in what they wrote in the founding documents and perhaps what they believed in their heart, but what they actually practice on a day-to-day basis. And I think the problem was back then, Manny, that was so entrenched in who they were and what, as far as the society was concerned, you know, slavery and subjugation and this and that, that it took a really bold and daring person to really literally come out and speak against that. And I think that's what the Founding Fathers did. But you're right. They still definitely were some Founding Fathers and people back in the day who, although they said they were for equality, they said they believe in equality for all people, still didn't necessarily practice what they preached. So I don't disagree with you on that.
That was basically most of my point. I had heard you say it a couple of times.
Yeah.
And I know you were using that kind of as a point for equality, and I definitely stand for equality, but I just wanted to kind of get that out.
It's a point well taken, so I appreciate the call. Thank you.
All righty. Well, thank you for your time.
All right. There you have it. Manny calling from New Mexico there. Opening up another Freedom Line here on the Tom Hartman program at 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466. It's Bring It On Friday. The Freedom Express chugging along, and just hop along the Freedom Express at your own peril, perhaps. All right. Let's go next to Jim from Illinois. And Jim
Hello?
Wants to talk about the stocks and the economy. Hey, Jim.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, I want to ask you about the economy and gold. I got money in gold, and gold has really been taking a dive.
Yeah, what do you want to ask me about that? I'm not a gold expert. The only gold that I had was like little gold dog tags we used to wear back in South Philly. But outside of that, I'm not a big expert on gold.
Well, I listen to a show on and off in the car when I run errands, and Tom Hartman he endorses putting. He says. Investing in gold is smart,
right.
And I wanted to...
Yeah, no, all right, well, listen, what we'll do for you is that you could talk to Tom, actually, when he gets back on Tuesday, but that is not my forte.
Gold experts.
Yeah, I'm not a gold expert. I'll talk to you about halitosis or heart attacks or things like that, but gold...
I could teach you how to play an A chord on the guitar or piano.
Could you?
Sure, that's maybe, my specialty.
Maybe we'll do that a little later then. All right, let's get to the Freedom Lines, and next is Michael, and he's watching on TV in Virginia. What's happening, Michael?
Hey, doctor. Listen, I'm going to pose a question to you in a comment, all right? It's about there are entities in our government that promote the exaggeration of a threat that doesn't really exist. In other words, informants, provocateurs that are stats and that stir up things. And you find these individuals in different parts of the world, different wars, different excursions or Shiite Sunni gang type related system.
Michael, we saw that in the Bush administration. I don't know if you remember, but the Bush administration, remember they created terror alerts, and they had like red for like high alert and orange for almost high and yellow like you don't know what to do.
Exactly.
Yeah, so
check this out. You're exactly right. Now that's something. Now listen to this. This gentleman who killed the prison guard, not prison guard, the guy who was in charge of the prison system.
Right.
Well, that guy, that gentleman, was in prison. He was actually in confinement for years of solitary confinement, all by himself. The only human contact he had was maybe with his food being sent to him in a little slot.
So what you're saying is he might have had a bone to pick with somebody because he felt he was treated inhumanely.
Well, listen to this. The DA, the guy that actually was killed, actually was releasing information regarding the fact that these prisoners were released from this solitary confinement kind of terror or torture kind of experience right into the public.
Wow.
They weren't being calmed down. They're coming out of years of solitary confinement, just released. Now this gentleman, the prison warden, whatever you want to call him, the guy is, he was releasing information about that.
I see.
He was against it. He was opposed to it. And he just gets shot or killed by the same situation. Now, listen, you're a doctor.
Yes, sir.
Is it possible to implant, say, for example, a psychological type of inception to create circumstances that will cross all these moral, political boundaries?
All right. Well, let me do this. Let me answer that. I mean, with the technology today, anything's possible. I mean, you could implant chips in people's brains. We actually do it right now to treat certain diseases. We treat Parkinson's disease and other types of diseases by implanting electrical circuits or chips to modify the neural circuitry in the way that neurons interact with one another. So, look, anything's possible. Eric, you and I were looking at that little,
mosquito
robot on the
like
internet.
A little drone the size of a mosquito.
Right. And where were they saying that in the future they're going to be able to do what?
They're working on it. They want it to be able to fly covertly into your home, land on you, take a sample of your DNA, and get out.
Right.
Or
stay attached to you and monitor you, right?
And follow you around.
It'll have audio devices, video devices, things like that. I mean, Big Brother is not too far away, is it?
No.
No. So all
the,
yeah,
it's a little farther than the book 1984, but not that many years off.
Well, maybe we can come up with a sequel like 2024.
That's more like it.
The second, the sequel. But all right, well, listen, let's get back to the Freedom Lines at 1-866-987-THOM, and everybody's going to get a say here today. Next up in the queue, I believe, is another Jim. We got a lot of Jims here right now. Okay, Jim from Ohio. What's up, Jim? Hello, Jim.
All the Jims are going yes. Hello.
Let's try him one more time. Jim? All right, I'm going to drop Jim because you only get a few seconds to get in here, so we'll keep going down the queue. Tom's got incredible callers. The phone, as soon as somebody hangs up, the phone lights right back up. So there's a lot of people dialing away to hop along the Freedom Express here. So let's go next to Matt. Matt is in Seattle, Washington, and he wants to comment on the same-sex marriage and I believe the chain CPI as well. What's happening, Matt?
Hey, not much. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well.
I was pretty good in math and econ, and thing about the CPI is that, you know, we can only estimate inflation, right?
Right.
And, so we do it by getting what they call a market basket of goods, and they look at the goods in that basket over time and see what happens to the prices. So right. You have to have this finite amount of goods. And
basically what they're saying, let me just interject. I mean, I did take economics at NYU just one semester, but when you're looking at the consumer price index, I mean, basically it's an aggregate in general. If you take all of these goods and services and whatnot on average, that's kind of what a consumer is going to pay. So if that consumer price index, say, hypothetically is 99 and then it goes up to, say, 120, that means on average consumers are going to be paying more for those same goods and services at a particular time than they were previously. So that's kind of what you're talking about, inflation. So what my understanding is that somehow or another they're going to tie Social Security to the CPI, and so that if the CPI goes up, typically your Social Security benefits should go up in tandem with that, so that that way you have the same purchasing power. But if you don't go up in tandem with that, and the CPI goes up, but your benefits don't go up for Social Security, then you have less purchasing power, which in essence means you got a cut in Social Security. Correct? All right. Well, I don't know if he says it.
I think you baffled him on that.
I baffled him. But you followed what I was saying, right?
Yes.
I mean, it makes pretty much logical sense. All right. Well, listen. Freedom Express pulling up to its final stop, final destination right now. We're going to get to your final calls when we get back. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Broadcasting from 1480 KPHX here in Phoenix, Arizona, Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman. Okay, welcome back. This is the final segment for the day, final segment for the week, final segment for the weekend, Eric.
The day just flew by, Mike.
It flies by when you're having fun. So we'll be back next week for sure, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Tom will be broadcasting on Tuesday, and look forward to, again, speaking to Tom's great audience and having a great opportunity to discuss the issues that are germane and pertinent to all of our daily lives. So that being said, let's get back to the Freedom Lines right now. Next up in the queue is Stacy on the line from New York, New York. Stacy, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Thank you, Dr. Mike. Thank you.
Thank you.
I wanted to talk about gay marriage real quickly. I know we're at the end of the show. Every time I turn the radio on this week, I'm hearing mostly African-Americans come up with a reason why gay people shouldn't be married.
Right.
What really gets me the most angriest is the fact that they equate homosexuals with pedophiles.
Bestiality.
And,
bestiality.
Know,
incest.
Of that sort.
Incest, when, yes.
Yes, when it's documented that most pedophiles are heterosexual.
Right. Look at the Catholic Church and the priest. I mean,
exactly.
I grew up Catholic, but, you know, those pedophiles were white priests who were, you know, male.
Exactly. But they and they're very quick to say, well, homosexuals cannot reproduce. There are many, many couples who get married. So you're over 55, you shouldn't be allowed to get married because you can't produce a child.
Right. That's ridiculous. I agree with you.
Yeah, most of the stuff that they bring up has been resolved by the courts many years ago. We've already discussed, polygamy. That's already been handled by the courts.
Right.
You know, marrying your cousin, that's already been handled by the courts. You've already taken care of these issues. But they keep bringing them up, And black people really need to be careful about denying other people's
Right. And that's what we were talking about earlier. If anybody should be the most sensitive and sympathetic to that, the horrendous plight of the African-American throughout the history of this country, you would think would lend it that experience would lend itself to them having perhaps a different viewpoint when it comes to equal rights and civil rights.
Right. And you know, most of them look at it as on a religious point where it really has nothing to do with religion. It's all a legal point. My tax dollars go to pay for City Hall where you go and you get a marriage license. When you get divorced, you don't go to your church. You go to the court.
It's
all a legal matter. And my tax dollars go to support these courts and everything else. And everybody, gay people, pay taxes, and they should have the same
rights. I agree, Stacey. Well, look, I agree with you. It sounds like you got a great head on your shoulders, so we need more people like you in America. So thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. That's Stacey calling in from New York, New York. Let's go next to, let's go to Brian on the line from Illinois. He wants to talk about the declining wage levels in America. Brian, welcome to the Tom Hartman Show program.
Hey, good afternoon, Dr. Mike. Enjoy the show. You know, I'm in a union. I'm one of the fortunate Americans that are still privately employed in a union, and I work construction. And, you know, everybody knows that since the early 70s, real wages in constant dollars has been declining in this country.
Absolutely.
And there's been multiple reasons. It's been bad trade deals, which unfortunately both parties have been promoting. But what I really want to talk about now is immigration, okay? Yes. I work in the construction industry. I deal with immigrants every single day.
Uh-huh.
Now, many of them are very hard workers, but the Democratic Party and the liberals are way wrong when they act like that we can absorb unlimited numbers of immigrants, and it's not going to depress and cause high unemployment and lower wages for native-born Americans.
Yeah, but I don't think anyone's saying, Brian, to my understanding, there's unlimited immigration. Actually, for the Gang of Eight or whatever, the Bipartisan Commission of Senators who are working on immigration reform, they're talking about a finite number of work-related visas being issued per year so that you can make sure, like you said, there's not just like some tsunami of, you know, people coming into this country and
right.
not be able to accommodate.
Another point. Can I quickly make this point?
Yeah.
In the Chicagoland area, we have immigrants from all over the world. Okay, I know that 40% of the illegal immigrants come through the airport. They're not coming across the Mexican border. They're coming from Poland, Ireland, Russia, India. They're coming from all over the world.
Right.
And in my line of work, I go into many active businesses, and I see what's going on in all these businesses. I see it from the loading dock to the CEO's office. I see everything.
Sure.
And I see that businesses love to hire immigrants because they get them cheap. They love cheap workers who are eager to work, and the last thing they want to deal with is some pain in the butt American teenager or some American that's dropped out of high school and has a sense of entitlement. And I believe that if liberals and Democrats really want to see American unemployment decline, and you want to see American wages rise, and you want to see the working standards of people in the world rise also, you have to limit immigration. You have to change these idiotic trade laws, because you're just playing right into the Republicans' hands with wide open borders. Oh, gee whiz, let them all in.
I hear you. All right, well, listen, Ryan, I'm going to get to another caller, but I appreciate your perspective. Thanks for calling in and voicing your ideas. Thank you. All right. So that's Brian there. I just want to try to get one other caller here. Mary's been holding the longest, it looks right now, from North Carolina, and she's listening on SiriusXM satellite.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I'll be quick. I know that we're at the end. I want to respond to the gentleman way back who was against same-sex marriage. First of all, his definition is absolutely ridiculous. Polygamy means that you're married to several wives and you have sex with many people. A monogamous same-sex marriage means monogamy.
Right.
You're in a consenting relationship. So he's off there. He's also basing his opinion on the Bible, which is ridiculous. You know, there is something called a separation of church and state.
So, all right. Well, that sounds good. Well, listen, Mary, you got the last word this week, so thanks a lot for your ideas there. All right, listen. As always, we appreciate it. We'll be back on Monday filling in for Tom Hartman. This is Dr. Mike Newcomb signing off from the Liberal Oasis in the Valley, 1480 KPHX. Talk to you soon.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.